You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Good morning and welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Buck, Calvin Butenoff, coming to you live from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. You can leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter, Thursday, May 1st. First of May.
It's gonna be May.
May showers, spring, April, yeah, whatever. Yeah. It's raining.
It's raining.
It's rainy. It's very, very rainy. Make sure you turn your headlights on, please.
I feel like at this point, like, I would say so many cars nowadays, my headlights just are on, period.
Automatically.
And now they're automatic when it goes dark. They turn brighter.
Oh.
And I have a switch that goes brightest if it senses that I'm alone. My car's amazing, but I'm just surprised nowadays that that's even an option to turn them off at all. Like,
see, because I have a 2012, so they don't go on automatically.
Really? No. Okay. All right. Yes. Well, Jane is right. Turn them on.
Please turn them on in the rain, because it really is. When I was driving down this morning, there were just a couple of stretches where it was raining so hard.
Yeah.
Visibility is terrible. Mm-hmm. And if you're driving and you don't have your lights on, you're hard to see.
That's weird to me. Yeah.
Yep. So turn on your lights, please. Just a little reminder. It is Thursday, which means we have a full show for you today. Jim Santel, our friend and colleague and host of Amicus, a law review Saturdays across the network from 9 to 11, is joining us after the 9:30 news. We're going to start off by talking about Judge Hannah Dugan.
Yes.
Who is the Milwaukee County judge who was arrested over the handling of an illegal immigrant who was appearing before her in court. Mm-hmm. And she's put together a legal team now. And Jim will be able to walk us through this in the accurate legal terms, because we are not lawyers.
We are?
Lawyer adjacent.
Exactly.
We're lawyer adjacent. So stick around for Jim Santel coming up in just a little bit. Next hour, Brittany Merlot will be here with Weather and Wine. Find out how long this rain is going to last. J.R. Radcliffe, Journal Sentinel sports guru, here at 10:35. I love the notes that he sent you this morning.
Yeah.
The Bucks are bad, 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 and bad.
They are bad.
They are bad. So we're going to talk about the Bucks, among other things. And we'll wrap it up, as we always do, with this shouldn't be a thing today, the King Kong versus Ding Dong edition.
Yeah.
This is a good one. Stick around for that. That's coming up around 10:51. Wanted to start off, though, with Trump tariffs.
I mean, Trump terrific tariffs.
Terrific tariffs, yes. If we look back and remember.
How far am I going?
Oh, go back to last year.
Oh, yes.
Go back to last year.
Yes.
When Donald Trump, out on the campaign trail, repeatedly said that other countries pay tariffs, not consumers. Everybody else pays tariffs, not consumers.
Yeah.
In Arizona, last August, at a rally, Donald Trump said Vice President Kamala Harris is lying when she referred to his tariff plan as a Trump tax. Quote, she's a liar. She makes up crap. I'm going to put tariffs on other countries coming into our country, and that has nothing to do with taxes to us. This is a tax on another country, unquote. In September, during an interview on Faux News, it's not a tax on the middle class. It's a tax on another country. When Donald Trump was here in Wisconsin talking about tariffs, quote, it's not going to be a cost to you. It's going to be a cost to another country.
Now, for those listening who disagree with everything we say, I just want to point out the fact that Jane gave three separate quotes from three separate events from Donald Trump.
From Donald Trump.
This isn't fake news. This isn't lies. This isn't AI.
Or fear-mongering.
No, it is just him saying his words to people, and people bought it.
Yes, and people believed it until yesterday.
Ah.
Until yesterday. And there's been a lot of focus on his comments about this. This is what jumped out at me.
Yeah.
So here is his quote. Yesterday, someone was asking about the tariffs and about China and the concern. I've been seeing things on social media about the lack of activity at our ports.
Yes.
Especially in Los Angeles, which is what supposedly one of the busiest ports in the country. And the lack of ships in said ports bringing in goods from other countries. So he was asked about the tariffs and the effect on American consumers. Here is what Donald Trump said yesterday. Quote, you know, somebody said, oh, the shelves are going to be open. Well, maybe the children will have two dolls instead of 30 dolls. So maybe the two dolls will cost a couple bucks more than they would normally, unquote. This says to me, they're going to be more expensive because of the tariffs.
Yes.
Which he has said for months and months and months. Only other countries pay tariffs.
Yeah.
We don't pay tariffs.
You'll be fine.
You'll be fine. That's a lie.
Yeah.
That is a lie.
Yeah.
Here is how tariffs work. Importers import, exporters, they bring their goods here. Mm-hmm. Our American companies who import them, they have to pay the tariff.
Correct.
At the port.
Yes.
In order to get delivery of these items, they pick up the extra cost of these tariffs, which then get passed on to us. That is how tariffs work.
So whether you want to call it, whatever you want to call it, it is essentially a tax on us.
Yes.
For goods and services. And also, not to, I don't want to make light of this, but the whole doll example just makes him sound like like Ebenezer Scrooge. Like, they'll have less dolls this year. It's like, what child do you know? I mean, I'm sure there are, but like, children don't get 30 dolls.
And seriously.
Like, they ask for one nice doll, and it's just, who is helping him with these examples? They have to be coming out of his brain, because it is crazy. I mean, the New York Post jumped on this, and amazingly, too, with their headline.
What was the headline?
Skimp on the Barbie. I mean, I don't go to the New York Post for much, but that, my friends, was just chef's kiss headlines.
And Lawrence O'Donnell on MSNBC called it Donnie Two Dolls.
Hey, Donnie Two Dolls.
Donnie Two Dolls. Hey, Donnie Two Dolls. But again, this is an admission that the tariffs are going to land on us as the consumers, because we are the ones who will pay for the tariffs. No matter what they said all of last year out on the campaign trail, that other countries pay the tariffs. Only other countries. That's a lie. That's not how it works.
Yeah.
And now we know. Out of his own mouth.
The amount of people I've seen, like, I've seen all those YouTube videos where someone is saying, explain tariffs, and they explain it incorrectly, and then they get told the truth. They're always dumbfounded.
Yes.
They're always shocked because they are being lied to.
Yes.
And let's, I mean, I saw this too, that when it comes to tariffs, how it's hitting Wisconsin, Up North News just put this out. There is a Wisconsin manufacturer, because of the tariffs, losing out on $300,000 in business because China at the last minute backed out of the contract to say, we can't deal with it's going to be too expensive. We don't know if you're going to be able to pay it. So like, this has all, it's not just about the dolls. It's about the Wisconsin companies who employ Wisconsinites losing massive amounts of money because of a tariff plan that was not thought out, because tariffs are fine. They're not.
If they're strategically applied.
As they've said, tariffs are a tool.
Yes.
Not a weapon. And these have been weaponized and, once again, roughshod, shoddy work, whatever you want to call it. And now, guess what, folks? Me and you paying the price.
The U.S. Chamber of Commerce. U.S. Chamber of Commerce. That wildly liberal organization.
Just leftist commies.
So cray-cray. They are asking Trump for immediate tariff exclusions for small businesses and for any products not readily available in the U.S. This is the U.S. Chamber of Commerce asking the president for exclusions on tariffs for small businesses, which are the backbone of our economy. That's not going to happen. The White House response was, the relief for small businesses is going to come in the form of the largest tax cut in American history.
For the rich.
So suck up those tariffs, small businesses. Yeah. Too bad. if you had maybe an extra million or a million and a half laying around, you could donate to an inaugural fund or something. Maybe you'd get a carve out then, like, I don't know, Amazon or somebody else.
Well, we only know those coffee shops and auto garages and print shops. They're all run by billionaires, so they'll get that tax cut easy.
Oh, sure.
Absolutely easy. I guess for me, the question, you know, I'm sorry, I kind of lost the question in my thought here, but like, I love how he is admitting that he's admitting that it's going to be hard, but he still has the White House behind him saying it'll be fine.
It's going to be fine.
So what's next? What this 2 years of pain that Elon talked about?
More than once.
That no one's bringing up, by the way.
2 years of pain. It's all fine. It's all fine. And if you're a good American, apparently, you won't complain about it.
No.
You'll just pay it.
And harvest your own eggs, make your own goods.
Rent a chicken.
Hey, your kid doesn't need a doll. Sew a dress for them.
Get a half a doll.
Exactly.
855-752-4842. 855-75-CIVIC. Gene from Eau Claire is on the line. Good morning, Gene. Thanks for joining us. What do you want to say about this?
Well, good morning. And I just have a word for all the common folks. The common folks. You know, the non-billionaires. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Mm. Wake up, folks. Yeah. Have a good day. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, Gene. Have a great day.
I do remember what I was going to say is like what the U.S. commerce manufacturers are doing. They're asking for special dispensation for small businesses. I understand that. But at this point, it feels like there are the tariffs, and now there are all of these pockets of exception happening.
Yes.
To the point with—
He was just in Michigan yesterday.
Who will then be affected? It'll be small businesses that have no lobbying power.
Yep.
And they're going to be the ones crushed. But that's the free market, Jane. They should have known, but they should have had $1 million handily in a bank somewhere they can just pass along to the president.
Not a gift so much.
No.
Not really. That's probably the wrong way to put it.
You know, you need to make
payoff
more.
Payoff might be a better word.
There it is.
Payoff.
Bribe. There's
it. That's a word, too. That's a word, too. I also would love to know what you think about, should companies list the tariff cost?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Should they list the tariff cost? If you listen to the White House, that's almost treasonous.
Correct.
That's un-American. You're being— they freaked out about that when Amazon was talking about doing it.
Yeah.
Should companies list the cost on the tariffs on your receipt when you buy something?
I mean,
855-752-4842. I'm genuinely curious what people think. 855-752-4842. Should companies be listing the cost of the tariffs on your receipt just so we know how this is affecting us? On the ground, us as consumers and Americans.
Guess what my answer is, Jane?
Don't. We'll get it on the other side.
There it is. That's called a teaser. Find out.
855-75-CIVIC. We'll keep this going on the other side. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
A swing man. She can't hurt. She don't mean no harm. She just don't.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Good morning and welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair. Greg Box, Sweet Calby on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. Call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching in the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. You can also text directly if you have the completely free Civic Media app.
It's very easy to get.
It is easy to get. Wherever you get your apps, look for Civic Media. Download that completely free. You can pick your favorite station. You can listen to all of our stations.
Yeah.
All across the network.
Mm-hmm.
That includes great music stations like WRJN right across the hall from us here on 1400 AM.
Yeah.
So download the Civic Media app. It is completely free. Before we went to the break, we were talking about Trump tariffs, and after essentially lying on the campaign trail about how we're not tariff schmeriffs, we're not going to have to pay for that, that's fine. He called Kamala Harris a liar, just making crap up. I'm going to put tariffs on other countries. That has nothing to do with us until yesterday. When Donald Trump said, oh, somebody's complaining that the shelves are going to be empty. Well, maybe the children will have two dolls instead of 30 dolls. So maybe the two dolls will cost a couple bucks more than they normally would, which to me says we will be paying for the tariffs.
Let's use a different example. Let's take the dolls out of the equation.
Okay.
Telling the parents and the families, hey, you're just going to have to buy one package of toilet paper. Or, hey, you're going to have to deal with less food available. Or, hey, you're going to have to deal with higher prices. Just deal with it, okay?
Well, be a good American.
This is the price you pay for being in a great America.
Yeah, exactly. 2 years of pain.
Yeah.
Elon said it. 2 years of pain.
And we're only 4 months in.
Not even. 855-752-4842. Amazon earlier this week got crushed after the rumor that they were going to put the cost of tariffs on receipts. And then, of course, Caroline Leavitt, the press secretary, essentially called him a traitor for doing that. And Trump called Bezos, and of course, they made nice, and everything's fine. Because they're not going to do it now.
No.
So should companies be listing the cost of the tariffs on our receipts? 855-752-4842. Why should it be a secret?
This
should be something we're all proud of. I am paying this extra for the greatness of Donald Trump.
When I get an airline ticket, when I go to the grocery store, there's a breakdown of the cost, the taxes. When I book hotels for the club, there's a breakdown of state, local, holiday, like all these taxes, all these percentages. I know exactly what I'm paying, so I know exactly that I'm not being overcharged and what my money's going towards. I don't see why a Trump's tariff, not just tariff, but Trump's tariffs. Tariff should be on every line of every receipt coming, because you should know how much you are paying. And honestly, if a small business did that, I would be like, okay, I get it. You don't like this either, I'm sure, because you're paying more and that means I have to pay more. But at least there is a transparency there and you can actually see the results instead of, you know, just saying, well, no, it's not.
Why would this be something that retailers have to hide? If this is something that's all going to, it's all so good.
Yeah.
Why would we not share this news, this great news?
Yeah.
And have it there for everyone to see. Brian from Milwaukee has been patient on the phone. Good morning, Brian. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, good morning. Yeah. Excuse me. I agree with you guys that, you know, just like the other state taxes, federal taxes, that, you know, Trump's tariff should be on there. You know, for two reasons. One, I want to know where my money's going. But two, also for the people who voted for Trump, you know, let the damage sink in.
Mm-hmm.
Give them, you know, let it sink in, because they can start realizing how great their wonderful, you know, president is and how it's affecting them. And it's funny because I think it was Port of Seattle had a photo yesterday that they posted online where, guess what?
Yeah.
The port was completely empty. There was no shipping containers. And they made a statement saying, hey, there's no more ships coming to and from China. This is it. Mm. We're done.
Yeah, I'm because I am such a great prognosticator. Let me get my turban. I'm guessing in about 3 weeks to a month. we're really going to start seeing the effect on the shelves.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's going to take a little bit for this to work its way through the economy. Scott Bessent, however, the Commerce Secretary, alluded this morning that there's going to be some big announcement about tariffs coming later today. Thank you, Brian. So we'll see what happens with that. But should retailers be listing the cost of the tariffs on your receipt? I don't know why this is something we would want to hide.
No.
855-752-4842. And from Chippewa Falls, I think we should know the cost of the tariffs. Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Let me know how great America is by putting it on. Hey, make it call it the MAGA tax.
Put it in a special color.
Yeah, exactly.
Red, white, blue. Celebrate
it. Gold. Should be in gold. Oh, my gosh.
Steve from Milwaukee, it's like COVID all over again. Deny and deflect on the effects of his policies.
And if the economy picks up, say, in 2035, he'll be there going, see, I did that. And it just absolutely makes no sense to me that, like, I would want to see that. I think we should have to see that because it just makes more sense. It also helps just, I don't know, I don't want to say deflect the blame, but like I said, businesses can say, look, this is not something we want to do, but we have to do it.
It's reality.
Yeah.
It's reality. And trust me, if the situation were reversed and the Biden administration done this, it would be a requirement for companies to put the cost on their receipts.
Absolutely.
We're going to go to the news. And when we return, our friend and colleague and host of Amicus, a Law Review, Jim Santel, will be joining us. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning and welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Calvin Ader on the board, coming to you from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up a little bit later on today, our friend and colleague Todd Alba, the great Todd Alba show from 2 to 4 p.m. They're going to have a No Mo May edition of What's Worse. Today is the 1st of May.
Yeah.
No Mo May is something that's kind of popped up over the last 5 years.
Yeah, yeah, yep.
So join Todd later on today between 2 and 4 for a No Mo May edition of What's Worse. Right now, we are being joined by another colleague and host of Amicus, a Law Review on Saturdays from 9 to 11 across the network. Jim Santel is here, former U.S. attorney and an acting attorney. Good morning, Jim. How you doing?
Right. A lot of acting going on these days, perhaps more than any of us would like.
Yeah. But
good to be with you, Jane, Greg, Calvin, as always.
Glad to have you with us, Jim. There's a lot going on, and we really wanted to focus on the arrest last week of Judge Hannah Dugan in Milwaukee. This is from ABC News. Wisconsin Supreme Court now temporarily suspends Milwaukee Judge Hannah Dugan after arrest. So if you wouldn't mind breaking this down for us, as to what happened with this suspect and the, I'm particularly curious about this warrant that was presented and the questions around that.
Absolutely. And I think that really is the principal focus. I should say at the outset, as I always have when I've spoken recently about this, just by way of background, I know Hannah Dugan well. She is a professional colleague of mine. I don't know that I've ever actually appeared in her court, but I knew her as a private attorney doing all sorts of wonderful things in the community, continue to be affiliated with her. We're together on various events in the community, one just about 3 weeks ago. And I also consider her a personal friend with a small F. We don't hang out routinely,
sure,
as Greg and I do all the time.
Yeah, totally.
We don't have that kind of relationship. Yeah. But I want to let everyone know that I know her well, and I regard her as an excellent jurist. And so what happens here, of course, we know all the specifics of this. You can actually read the complaint itself What happens is, of course, that the United States Department of Justice and significantly the United States Attorney's Office for the Eastern District of Wisconsin. This is not coming out of, yes, it is coming out of Maine Justice, but the core office that is responsible for this prosecution is here in Milwaukee, the Eastern District. It is, again, at 517 East Wisconsin Avenue. It's the federal courthouse. I worked there for about 30 years or so. And so it is important to remember that, because this is not just Pam Bondi. This is not just Kash Patel. This is not just the President of the United States of America. This is also prosecutors right here in Milwaukee. Now, right now, there is an interim United States attorney. I served in that role a couple of times, or at least once, once as an interim, once as a presidentially appointed U.S. attorney. And the concept is that during the periods between administrations, one leaves, the next starts. You have to have somebody in charge and control.
Sure.
That does not in any way mean that you somehow lift analysis and lift examination of the U.S. Attorney's Office for those things that happened during that period. And indeed, you should be focused on that, because what happens here is that prosecutors in the U.S. Attorney's Office go to a federal magistrate judge. They present upon an affidavit, a written document. It's right here in front of me once again. And the affidavit is signed by an FBI agent. It summarizes the results of her investigation to this point. A lot of information gathered from a lot of different people. And the important thing to remember here, just in terms of the legal side of this, is it's all about probable cause. The affidavit is not establishing proof beyond a reasonable doubt. That's for a trial down the road. It's not even coming out of, and here's the other very important point, Jane, it's not even coming out of a grand jury yet. Now, what can happen here is that inappropriate circumstances highlight that. If you've got an exigent circumstance, I need to move quickly. Yes, the U.S. attorney does have the authority to issue basically a criminal complaint upon the approval of a federal magistrate judge. It is good for 30 days. And after that 30-day period under the federal rules, it expires basically. And then you have to go to a federal grand jury. That's in our Constitution, right? That's Amendment 5 of the Constitution, John Adams stuff. And so even though that is the basis upon which that criminal complaint, the matter has proceeded to this point, there is also a grand jury in Milwaukee, 23 people. They're pulled. They may not be me, but they may be Kelvin, maybe Greg, maybe you, that are pulled in, and they have to decide whether or not there is probable cause to indict. She has not yet been indicted. She's been charged on this criminal complaint. And that's where we are today. An awful lot more thoughts about the need to go so quickly here on a criminal complaint. And as you said, Jane, the real concern that I have about this from being there and in the office is decision to arrest on this criminal complaint. We can dispute whether or not the criminal complaint, whether there's probable cause. There may well be, and a magistrate judge has found that, again, presumed innocent until proven guilty. Important to note, right? But the notion that you arrest someone under these circumstances, here are the standards. We know them well. We've talked about them before. Is the target, is the defendant on a criminal complaint, on an indictment, a risk of flight, or is that person a danger to the community? Those are the two things in the rules, in the statutes that have guided the Department of Justice for years. And here, I look to this and I say, I cannot remember a time in my tenure as an assistant U.S. attorney, as a United States attorney, where under these circumstances, where you do not have either one of those with respect to Hannah Dugan, you would make the decision to go ahead and physically arrest her, put her in shackles. That photograph that it plainly we have all seen now, sent out by our director of the FBI, that decision is reserved for what? For truly violent criminals, people who are engaging in gun practices, drugs, gang activity, all sorts of things that really threaten right now the safety and security of our community, and who also pose a risk of flight. Luigi Mangione, perfect situation. Risk of flight? You bet he was. Yeah. He fled. Risk, danger to the community? Absolutely. He shot someone, again, allegedly, again, proven guilty perhaps one day. He shot someone. And then you look at the other extreme, Donald Trump. 4 indictments, documents, insurrection, paying off a porn star to be quiet, and also violating the rules of a state in the 2020 election. In none of those was Donald Trump arrested. What happens is you call up his attorneys and you say, come on in, we've got these indictments. Let's see if next week, Thursday, you can come in and we'll do this in a diplomatic, a measured way. It's safer, it's more secure. You can make the argument that Donald Trump was both a risk of flight, given what we think may be his financial resources, and also a danger to the community. Maybe so, given what he has done in the past. And even there, the Department of Justice made the determination that there is no reason to bring him in under shackles. Eric Adams, indicted again by the Department of Justice. What happens there? Again, a criminal complaint, an indictment alleging fraud. What's the decision? To bring him in again in this very measured way. A date certain, he appears. Yes, you get processed. Yes, you get the mugshot, so to speak.
Right.
But the notion that somehow this particular case prompts the need to arrest someone in these circumstances. And the final thing I'll say about this, I've gone on way too long, but it's important, I think, to understand. If you made that unsupported decision about arrest, which is, I don't want to say unprecedented, we use that word too much, but almost unknown to me, and I think to defense attorneys, to prosecutors, to others out there, if you made that decision on this procedural issue to arrest, and then, of course, she's immediately released. Why? Because she doesn't pose a risk of flight. Isn't a danger. If you made that decision, the same people doing that made the decision that this is a predicate for charging her in the first place, and doesn't make you wonder. We know what's going on here. It's the Department of Justice calling the interim U.S. attorney and saying, we need to make an example of this person.
Yes.
Charge her. And oh, by the way, grab her and bring her in under shackles. That is contrary to so many policies and practices of the Department of Justice. I am horrified and I'm shocked that the agency for which I worked for 30 years has made that decision.
If you're just joining us, Jim Santel is our guest. He's a former U.S. attorney, also has a wonderful show on Saturday mornings from 9 to 11 across the network called Amicus, a law review. And we're talking about the case of Judge Hannah Dugan in Milwaukee, who was arrested last week. A couple of things I want to go back to just briefly, Jim. I think what you said about the grand jury is really important. Grand juries are not made up of people who the attorneys know are going to be on their side, and then they just pick them and pluck them out and put them on a grand jury. That's not how that works. Grand juries are made up of regular Americans, correct?
Absolutely. Pulled in the same way you stock a trial jury. You're summoned in, and there's a process for your selection. They're in place for 18 months, and they decide, once again, whether the government has shown probable cause, not proof beyond a reasonable doubt, probable cause to indict.
And I'm also assuming that if I volunteered to be on a particular grand jury, that might raise some eyebrows, and then I might not get picked for that said jury.
Jane, Greg, Calvin, you can send your letter in to the magistrate who selects and say, gosh, I'd really like to
pick
work
me.
On this.
I was just going to say,
pick me, please. Anyway, the woman who's with her hand raised in the front row.
With the wonderful
brooch. The answer is it doesn't work that way.
Oh,
you want to get people, again, who are certainly in the community, who have that capacity to, we call it critical thinking, right? To take a look. You don't have to be a lawyer. You're not a lawyer if you're on the grand jury. Take a look at evidence and apply your common sense as a citizen of the community, again, Eastern Wisconsin, and determine whether or not, again, at this lower standard, you are convinced that the evidence, the witnesses you've heard, the documents you've seen establish that very lowest level of criminal culpability.
So the grand juries who indicted, say, some of the January 6th attackers, these were grand juries who decided after hearing the evidence that these people should go to trial. That's part of what's called due process, right?
Absolutely. Every single one of those 1,000 more people, now pardoned, as we know, but every single one of them, some of them brought in on criminal complaints. But again, within 30 days, the U.S. attorneys around the country went into the grand juries, got that document, and that's the basis upon which this proceeds. Here's the question I think you're heading to, Jane. which is knowing that these folks in the grand jury, they're impaneled for 18 months. We do not watch their private proceedings.
Right.
This is not an open court for all sorts of good reasons. But they also live in the community. I suspect that many, if not all of them, have seen the huge amount of coverage about this. Does one of them ask about the motivation for this? Putting aside the evidence about this, does that question get asked? Does that question get answered? Where is the genesis? Why are we doing this particular case? What justice-related, rule of law-related mission does this accomplish? That question should be asked by them.
We're going to continue our conversation with Jim Santel on the other side. Stay with us. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Good morning and welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Buck. Calviente on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can join us, call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Our guest, our friend and colleague and host of Amicus, a law review Saturday mornings from 9 to 11 across the network, Jim Santel is here. We're talking about the Judge Hannah Dugan arrest from last week. We're going to get back to that. But breaking news, just as we come back on the air from CBS News, Trump's national security advisor, Mike Walls, and his deputy are out at the White House. Last month, Walls came under scrutiny after putting together that Signal chat. Oopsie, included a reporter from The Atlantic.
Womp womp.
Who then shared the details of the sharing war plans over an unsecured app, which has messages that disappear. So they no longer become, they fall under the FOIA rules.
Yeah.
But this is the first fallout. And I'd seen a lot of people finger Mike Walls as who was going to be the sacrificial lamb, because somebody's got to go for this. So this at least is the beginning.
And it ain't going to be Pete Hegseth. For now.
Not for now. We'll see what happens. But that's breaking just as we came on the air. Jim, I want to go back to Judge Hannah Dugan and her arrest last week. And I think it's really important that we understand how unusual it was for her to be cuffed and arrested and have that all go down, because that's not normal. And they could have, the Biden administration Justice Department could have done this to Donald Trump, right? They could have cuffed him. They could have cuffed him and done a perp walk, and they didn't do that because he didn't fall under the, you know, the whole flight risk and all danger to the public and all that stuff, which in my estimation, neither does Judge Dugan. She didn't seem to be a flight risk. She wasn't a danger to the community. This was a performative arrest.
Absolutely. And although he didn't use the word perp with respect to her, I'm also very troubled. Language means something, right, Jane?
Yes.
I'm also very troubled by the fact that my director of the FBI referred to the underlying case. Again, it's involving Eduardo Flores Ruiz. We know about that. Referred to him as the perp. And again, you know, obviously it's short for perpetrator. That's the kind of, I would say, guttural language that I would not expect from law enforcement. Let's use their name. Let's identify him as the defendant, those kinds of things. It reflects once again the point that you made so well, Jane, which is, this is for image, this is for performance, and this is to tell the world, not just Wisconsin, not just the United States, but the world, look what we can do.
Yeah.
If you cross us, and if you take a stand, if you do something, may or may not be criminal in nature, again, we'll reserve that for another day, But if you do that, we will put you in chains and we'll bring you to a federal courthouse and ask you to respond to a magistrate judge who's going to read the charges that we have brought against you. We talk a lot about deterrence, you and I and Greg and Calvin. There is good deterrence and there is bad deterrence, right? There is good deterrence to stop a particular person from acting. And then there's the general community deterrence. You want people to know that if you rob a bank, yes, you will get in trouble, right? That's a good thing, right? Here, what you're doing is you're deterring people from speaking. And again, it's not so much a First Amendment case. You're deterring people from doing the things that they would otherwise do in support of civil rights and human rights. Even a judge, especially in her courtroom, has that capacity. What here you are doing is you're sending the message to a larger community. Don't have to be a circuit court judge. Maybe you are just among the, again, as you said, the normal people who are out there doing your jobs, doing your work, have your family, your business, making your way in life. And if you cross us, this might happen to you. And that's what that picture is all about.
Absolutely. And at least in Judge Dugan's instance, she's got some resources. She has assembled a legal team now, but for the average person, you know, not all of this stuff is being done pro bono. And we've talked about this before, as far as the intimidation factor, it's not necessarily that you do something the administration doesn't like and they're going to immediately jail you, but they can ruin your life.
Yes.
By taking you to court and bleeding you dry financially.
As we've often said on this wonderful program, the investigation and here the charging is the punishment. And even if it turns out that the grand jury here, other cases involving people who used to be a part of the Trump administration, he's identified two already in that category, referred for investigation. Even if it doesn't result in a criminal prosecution going to trial, the reality is that responding to subpoenas, requests for information, interviews, financial materials, all kinds of things, that costs money.
Yep.
And it costs lawyer resources. And that's why I'm so proud of a portion of my profession. And I'd like to think, including me as well, that's come forward and said, you know what, we will do the representation pro bono to ensure that those people inappropriately targeted are not the victims of complete economic devastation.
Well, and now we have a whole bunch of law firms who have already capitulated to the Trump administration.
Absolutely.
And what the heck are they going to do when the Trump administration comes to them and says, we want you to go after this guy?
And do it for free.
And you're doing it pro bono.
Mm-hmm. And that's the problem in dealing with Donald Trump, of course. The changing contract, if you will, to put it a whole lot more charitably than it should be, right? We'll put this arrangement together. We will stay away from you for now.
For now.
For now.
Mm-hmm.
But if you run afoul of what we want you to do, then we're coming back and we'll do more of that. It is, again, deterrence of a very bad nature. It is intimidation, which is a better way to think about it.
This
regrettably, again, I asked the question. I think the attorney general should be asked and the director of the FBI, where did this come from? What's the motivation for doing this, Madam Attorney General?
Join Jim Santel Saturdays from 9 to 11 across the network for Amicus, a law review. Thank you so very much, Jim. Really appreciate your time. By the way, Judge, I still volunteer to be on that grand jury. I'm available. I'll make myself available. News is coming up next. Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.